The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
Second hour of the Bible Study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. Our telephone numbers, if you'd like to join the program, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our guest in this hour of conversation, Pastor Randy Wilkin. He serves as a pastor at The Rock down on King's Highway. Also is a participant in the Acts 1-8 Mission Society. And apparently he's connected to something called Silver Street, whatever that is. He's got a shirt on this morning. It says Silver Street with a State of Illinois on it. What's that all about?
Oh, yeah. We do a project every year. And
Who's we?
Well, the Mission Society and a bunch of people around the St. Louis area. And we come together every spring, and we do, and we're actually going to start it in the fall as well. And what we do is we just go out in the neighborhood and unconditionally clean it up. And it started in East St. Louis. And we,
what does it mean to unconditionally clean it up?
Oh, there's no condition. We just go, and if somebody needs something cleaned up in their yard, we just clean it up, and we literally sweep the streets.
So you never say, oh, no, we don't do that.
Yep, nope. Mm-mm. And if we see somebody out, we may not know them, they're working on their yard, we just go in and just help them, period.
So what is silver street mean?
Right, real quick.
I would understand. I'd have a guess if it said Golden Streets. That's I get, but
exactly.
Silver Street. What's that
exactly?
Mean?
Well, let me see. This started way back in 2002, and it was a group of young people from Christ Our Savior Lutheran High School, way down in I think it's Evansville, Illinois. And anyways, we got together with a bunch of kids from East St. Louis, and we got together and we started talking about a project that we would do together. And I said, what are we going to name this project? And somebody said Silver Streak. I thought they said Silver Street.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the movie Silver Streak.
Right, right.
Yeah, don't ask me why. And I says, oh, Silver Street, I like that. Because the streets in heaven will be paved in gold, but while we're here on this earth, we'll just pave them in silver.
All right.
So that's the reason for Silver Street.
Have you seen the movie Gran Torino?
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very interesting movie with some theological themes. Been around for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
This is
mm-hmm.
certainly nothing new.
Yep.
But I saw it last night, and there is a depiction in that movie of Chinese people.
Mm-hmm.
And Latino people and
mm-hmm.
black people, all in their involved in their various cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the main character portrayed by Clint Eastwood is just an old-style kind of Archie Bunker bigot.
Mm-hmm.
So he sort of has a bigoted kind of a view on life, but it's, for the most part, harmless, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, I've got to ask Randy Wilkin what he thought of the depiction of the people there, the various cultures there, and the old sort of post-World War II bigotry. And what was your general sense of that? Was it a responsible depiction of cultural challenges in our country?
I don't think specifically it was. Like, you know, this is exactly, you know, the problems of each culture, etc. But what I thought is generally, it was pretty darn good, because we all have the stereotypical, this is what each culture is about, and here's how we're going to handle them, etc. And just him coming along and unconditionally, well, do you want to say unconditionally? Yeah, pretty well. Unconditionally loving the kid that, tried to break in and steal his car.
Yeah.
And that he unconditionally, you know, this young man finds favor with him, not for anything that he did, and there's no real value, etc., that, you know, that you can see in the kid. Well, we kind of see it. But, and that's culturally, yeah. Clint was kind of representing us. We're kind of afraid of all these other cultures coming into our quote-unquote society.
Hmm.
And actually, the other cultures are creating our society. And how do you deal with this?
The main question I wanted to put mm-hmm. to you, and I don't even know if it's relevant, but I'll take a shot.
Mm-hmm.
There are at least two at least two, maybe three groups of young males depicted in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
They're gang types, mm-hmm. they're thugs, mm-hmm. they're sort of expressing their masculinity mm-hmm. in that kind of a setting, and it's not very pretty. It's a long way from A Christmas Story and, mm-hmm. and the mm-hmm. Fairly innocent little boys that are portrayed in that movie. If the Clint Eastwood movie Gran Torino is a decent representation of that kind of cultural phenomenon, masculinity, gang type, that's pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you think that it was an overstatement or an understatement, generally right on, or what?
No, it's pretty close. Yeah.
Because it caused me to sort of fear for the future of my country. If this is where a good portion of our young boys, young men, are headed,
because mm-hmm.
they're going to wind up dead. If they're going to wind up in violence.
Yep. Well, I'm going to make a statement. And one of them is, working in East St. Louis, I've been working with a lot of young men, kind of the ones that you're talking about. And I'll talk to them about, I'll ask them, so what are you going to do when you get out of high school? What are you going to be when you grow up, type question? And basically they'll look at you and just, grow up? What are you talking about? Because for them, the average life expectancy is about 26 years old. So by the time
they're... Terrible.
Yep. By the time they're 26, young men, they're either dead or in jail or, you know, paralyzed, you know, in a wheelchair. And you go over and you start to realize that's the future that these young people have. You say, you know, it's kind of scary, you know, what about our country, you know, what do we expect? Is this really the direction that we're going in? And for those that have no hope, that's been the case for a very, very long time. It's not a new phenomenon. I remembered that when I was growing up. I grew up as a, we were poor. We were one of the poorer people in my school. We were kind of the blue-collar, working-class individuals, and really no hope going to college. No such thing. No one ever talked about college. My dad didn't even graduate. He graduated from eighth grade during the Depression, had to go to work. So very, very little hope. And you see that in this movie. This is your life. This is what you aspire to. It's all the, Lord of the Flies. That's basically it. And in the cities, not even in the cities. I'm going to even go a little bit farther. This is kind of what we're getting even in the wealthier neighborhoods of I'll just say the wealthier neighborhoods. I'll just use around here, Clayton, Ledoux, etc. You also have that sense going on. I have college, I'm going to go off to college, I'm going to earn money, etc. You still have that abandonment and the Lord of the Flies attitude.
Explain the Lord of the Flies connection to me.
Well, they make up their own rules. This is how society works. These are the rules we make up. You don't make them up. Things like, in the inner city, a parent will say to their kids, just go out and don't get arrested. Go out and have fun. Do whatever you're going to do. Just don't get arrested. But they don't have any money, so what do? They just kind of hang around in gangs of individuals. And those gangs create their own culture, their own society, their own hierarchy, their own rules. And that's what these kids live by, those rules that these groups of kids create. In the more affluent neighborhoods, what do we have? We have the same abandonment going on. The parents...
Abandonment?
Oh, yeah. The parents look at their kids and they go, okay, go out and do whatever you're going to do. Here's a credit card. Here's the keys to the car. Just don't get arrested. Same thing. And they go out, and what do? I mean, they're abandoned. They don't have parents following them around because the parents, oh, no, you're a good kid. I'll just give you money, you'll be safe. So basically you have the same things, these groups of kids coming together and hanging together and creating their own rules, their own societies, their own way of looking at things. And it's the same as the poor.
Now, the work that you do,
mm-hmm.
do you feel like you're at ground level with this cultural phenomenon? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're right at the center of it, or are you sort of on the periphery, exposed to it, looking in from the outside?
Here's the amazing thing. I'm right in the middle, right in the midst of it. And what's amazing...
If you're right in the midst of it, it seems to me that you would be in some danger.
Possibly. Maybe. But God doesn't let me see it.
Weapons.
Oh, yeah.
Drugs.
Oh, yeah.
Violence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's there. I dropped a young man off at his house, and I sat in front of his house and had a police officer pull up. And this was in East St. Louis, and the police officer pulls up behind us, flashing his lights, and comes up and says, what are you doing here? I said, I'm talking to this young man. Let me see some IDs. So we both give him IDs, and he wants to know, do you know where you're at? And I said, yeah, I'm a pastor. This is my parishioner here. And, you know, I'm in the neighborhood. I'm sitting right in front of his house. And he says, I really don't think I would do that if I was you.
What does that mean?
We're right near the projects. Anybody and a white guy with a black kid in the car, that's called drug deals going on. And he just recommended that I not do it. And I said, but we're talking, you know, I'm sharing with this young man that lives there, and we're talking about Jesus the whole time. But yet this guy is saying...
the guy really does have your best interests at heart, the cop, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, no, he was not harassing me.
Yeah.
No, he was not harassing me. He was just making a statement. Do you realize you're a target here? Well, I tell you what, Lord, you don't let me see those things. But I don't recommend it to anybody. I don't let other people do this. I don't. There are some people that will help me and drop kids off, but I tell them you drop them off and you go right to the highway. So, yeah, is there danger there? Yeah, but I'm going to tell you what. These kids that I'm working with live there 24/7.
So I couldn't do, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, if you retired today and I took up your work, I couldn't do it. I don't have any credibility with these people that you work with. You've earned that over many years of ministry. And that means that you probably know things, understand things, cultural dynamics. Mm-hmm. You talked about the hierarchy and the societies mm-hmm. and all that the rest of us just, we can't even imagine. Mm-hmm. What can you share with us?
Okay.
What do you, you're probably going to say to yourself, this could take days, but I mm-hmm. need you to give me like one or two things that you wish that I knew, that
okay.
knowledge that you've gained.
All right, I'm going to share with you this. We just got back from Texas. We went down and we did a little project. We call it the Texas Underground. And this is college students. And the week before the college students were there, this was just last week, we had college students between the 2nd and the 7th of January. And they came down to this little mission church in San Antonio in a mainly, predominantly Hispanic neighborhood. And so we went down there and we stayed there. And we brought college students from Western Michigan, Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa, Columbia, Missouri, University of Nebraska, Omaha. And we brought these students together with a few others from the San Antonio area, and we worked together in this environment. Now, the week before, we had high school students and families, et cetera, that came together and worked in the same environment. And this is basically, I brought the inner city kids and then the more affluent rural kids that have never worked with inner city kids ever before. We brought them together and we started talking. And what was amazing is this. There's very little difference between the two. They may have economic differences.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, they have economic differences, but they're going through a lot of the same struggles, And we think that, oh, I see all the crime going on in the in the inner city and gang violence, etc. We just don't see it as much in the suburban rural areas, but it's the same things going on. They're dealing with the same thing. Now you ask, what should you take back? What could I share with you? I don't remember your exact words.
I want to know what one or two things yep. you wish that I knew, mm-hmm. that you know, that I'm never going to know because I mm-hmm. don't have access mm-hmm. unless you tell me.
Every single one of these kids, 100%, they're all struggling with identity. They're all struggling with who they are. They're all struggling. Every one of them is struggling with lies out there, people telling them stuff that is absolutely 100% not the truth. But who do they have to go to? All of them are struggling with this. I have no one that I can trust that's actually given me the honest truth. Affluent people?
Well, that's normal to the human condition. You mm-hmm. you begin typically, God willing, mm-hmm. in the context of a family, uh-huh. and you don't know who you are. You just do what mom and dad tell you to do. Mm-hmm. And between the time where you begin to process information and when you leave home, mm-hmm. you are in search of your identity. Who am I? Mm-hmm. That's pretty normal to the human condition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So that doesn't strike me as an aberration. That strikes me as typical. But what makes your situation different from the? I grew up in a very sheltered environment.
Uh-huh.
No violence, no drinking, no alcohol, no just mm-hmm. what I would call a normal upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to figure out who I was, and everybody who goes through the eighth grade knows what it's like to go through those difficult years. So mm-hmm. what makes what you're describing different than what I went through?
That's the truth. There's not a lot of difference because the kids are going through the same thing. They may go through it in a different situation. One of the things that the kids that I'm working with and the kids in the rural area and the ones that resonate together, it becomes the abandonment. It becomes the and you are absolutely right. You grew up, you had mom and dad in the house, and then they had rules and they had conditions. You had family.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these kids do not have family. That's what they're looking for. They are looking for a place. They will abandon everything. They will give up everything just to be a part of a family that cares about them. Therefore, now you get the gangs. Now you get the drugs. Now you get all these things that, you know, the violence, the guns, because I'm protecting family, my turf, whatever you want to call it. You would protect, your parents would protect, you know, to the nth degree, you know, they would protect with their life that turf, that family, your house. Well, that's basically what these kids are doing. And what's kind of amazing is as you start to work with them, yeah, there's some abnormalities or some things specific to their situations, but in generally they're all crying out for the same thing. I want to be a part of a family.
So we have families, I don't want to be stereotypical here, mm-hmm. so just correct me if I need correcting. We have families in the in depressed areas
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that do not exist because there's a lot of out-of-wedlock birth
mm-hmm.
And fathers just move on. They disappear from the scene, nowhere mm-hmm. to be found. We have families in more wealthy
mm-hmm.
or prosperous areas where the family may be intact but is essentially invisible because dad works all the time, is never mm-hmm. home, is not involved. When he is home, you know, he's in the den or something and he's not interacting with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, in each case, the family is not very much intact.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
is there anything that the church can do about making families be intact? Or are you just stuck with the unfortunate outcome and all the young people who are suffering under this scenario?
Mm. Yeah.
Can you fix the families, Pastor?
No, can't. Can't fix them. And to try to fix them is near impossible. Here's what we do. We're not trying to fix them. I tell you what, I can't. This is the situation that you're in. This is what you're going to be going through. Here is what I can do is give you a place of respite a place where, and this is what we talk about in our little circles, is I make the kids shut off their cell phones. I make them stop texting when we're together, and here's the reason. I want you
well,
to
you're
have,
one tough hombre, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, and it's tough. I'm serious. I'm talking about, I get almost violent reaction to this. But here's the reason. You need a place where you're safe. You need a place away from the rest of the world. You need a place where you can come to and it's different. That's across the board. That's not just, economically depressed kids, from economically depressed areas. This is affluent kids as well. Leave those friends want to contact you during our 1, 2, or 3 hours that we spend in an evening. If they want to contact you, they can be here. I'm taking the time to be here. I'm sacrificing my time to be here with you, and we're going to do something different. It's going to be, Galatians, where it says, fruits of the Spirit are joy, peace, gentleness.
Kindness.
Yep, you got it. That's what we're going to experience in this time together. And after a while, that's what they're looking for.
So, this actually turns out to be fairly simple. We have disadvantaged people who don't have families because they are abandoned by father and or mother.
Mm-hmm.
We have families that are not intact because even though they're in affluent or advantaged situations, mother or father may be there in physically, but they are essentially absent as far as the kids are concerned. And when that happens, then these kids go to look to form their own family, to be part of a family somewhere. And what you're trying to do as a pastor and as a man of God is to create a family environment into which they can come as an alternative to some of these other places that almost always end up in drugs and violence.
Good. I'm going to do something I tell my kids not to do.
Yeah?
I checked the text message.
Yeah?
And here's the text message. And as a matter of fact, if this guy wants to call, what's the phone number to call?
505-7850. And is he calling from Illinois or from
Missouri? Down in Texas.
1-800-730-2727.
Oh, he ought to call. Because I tell you what, this is a young man that I worked with. He's in the SMP program. His name is Aaron Gecky.
What is the SMP program?
Specific Ministry Pastor. So he's studying to be a pastor. It's a long distance. The old Delta program was taken over by this.
Yeah.
And he's
studying. In other words, if you can't actually sit in the classrooms down here at Concordia Seminary, there is a way to take advantage of technology.
Yep.
Still cover the distance needed to become a pastor.
It's an online program, and then they come together here at the seminary. I don't know how often. But they come, and it's a one-week residency, and it's intense, etc. Here's what he wrote. I'm going to try to read it. Let me see. It says, of course you can't fix these kids, because as soon as they think that you think they're broken, they tune us out. That's the truth. They're not broken kids. Because as soon as we sit there and we start saying, oh, I understand your pain, and I'm going to fix it, I'm going to give you the family that you never had, they basically get defensive. They get defensive and say, I have a family, I have a dad, maybe he's not around a lot, but I have one. And they get very, very defensive, and they're going to defend what they already have. And what we do is we don't discuss trying to fix these kids. We don't discuss the fact that they're broken. What we do is just unconditionally love them. And we make them, because we have the disadvantaged kids with the affluent kids, working together in the same situation, the same group, and the group dynamics becomes, all of that stuff is left outside. And that after a while, the kids of affluence realize their situation is just like the kids of disadvantage. Because we label that, but they're all the same. And we just, here's the thing. I just came back from Texas, went to Granite City last night, and when I walked in, 100% of the kids came up and hugged me. Not me, but they hugged each other.
Yeah.
And it's the fruits of the Spirit. That's what they want to be a part of.
It's family.
Yes.
You're listening to the Bible study. Mm-hmm. Pastor Randy Wilkin is with us here. Our number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back.
Concordia Seminary has four core values, and one core value is excellence. People today demand the very best. Even people who ignore or misrepresent God's word of truth often strive for excellence. So shouldn't we strive all the more for excellence in our churches and seminary? Pastoral leaders will hold excellence high, helping invite people to the truth of our message.
This week on Lamplighter Theatre.
Nora, her ma said we can engage some professional actors from Drury Lane Theatre to teach us our parts. They may even think we're so good at acting that they will offer us roles on the stage.
You have a very great talent, Miss Nora. I can see our names together on the playbills. If you will come with me, we'll run away to be married.
Don't miss the next Lamplighter Theatre here on this station.
Saturday mornings at 11 on KFUO Radio.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
England has a surprising critic of abortion. It's British royalty. Lord Nicholas Windsor is the son of the Duke and Duchess of Kent and the Queen's cousin. He calls abortion a mortal wound in Europe's heart. In a recent column, Lord Windsor pointed out the irony of Europe's rights-conscious political and social environment. Yet they support abortion, which he calls one of the gravest and most egregious abuses of human rights ever tolerated. While a person 27th in line for the throne speaking out against abortion isn't going to move mountains, it's not bad. British subjects generally think highly of their royalty. It helps the cause for unborn babies there to have one of them speaking out against the tragedy of abortion and standing up for the most defenseless among them.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Unwelcome. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. Arizona Governor Jan Brewer has signed into law emergency legislation to head off picketing by a Kansas church near the funeral for a girl who was killed during Saturday's shooting in Tucson. The new law prohibits protests within 300 feet of a funeral or burial service. The Westboro Baptist Church plans to picket Thursday's funeral for 9-year-old Christina Taylor Green. The church has picketed military funerals to draw attention to its view that troop deaths are God's punishment for America's tolerance of homosexuality. The family of shooting victim Dorwin Stoddard says they're confident he's in heaven after giving his life to protect his wife. At a news conference, one of Stoddard's daughters said,
"We're just blessed that he's walking with the Lord now, but what a way to go. As a hero, he lived that kind of a life."
Stoddard was shot in the head while covering his wife, Mavie, who was shot in the leg. She's expected to recover. I'm Steve Coleman.
Concordia Publishing House.
Teach young children to read about Jesus in 25 words or less. The Hear Me Read Bible by Dr. Mary Mon-Simon gives children encouragement to read and understand Bible stories. 18 complete Bible stories, vocabulary checklists, easy tips for parents. Concordia Publishing House at cph.org.
Did you know that January is National Hobby Month? It's also National Soup Month and National Thank You Month. I would like to say thank you to you in January for becoming a KFUO Radio Day Sponsor. Day sponsorship is available for a monthly gift of just $40 over the course of a year. Maybe January is special for you because of a birthday or an anniversary. Call Joan Harwell at 314-505-7874. We have many available days in January.
You're listening to the Bible study and Ask the Pastor Hour. I'm Chuck Rathert. Pastor Randy Wilkin is with us. I never know how to identify Pastor Wilkin's. Who is this guy? Acts 1-8 Mission Society. Well, nobody knows what that is. You know what it is, but
no, I don't know.
Got a shirt that says Silver Street and is pastor at the Rock down Kings Highway, uh-huh. Which you know people say the Rock, Saint Rock. So you really are quite the aberration. I guess you know that, don't you?
Yep. I just, let me see. I just met with somebody up in Rockford, Illinois, met with a pastor, and he said to me, he said, I met you three times now, and we've talked three times, and I'm finally starting to think I understand what you're all about. And I said, good, you can clue me
How
in.
How many more times do you have to meet before he says, I completely understand what you're all about?
Well, I tell you what, has to participate. He'd have to come. I can't explain to people what this is about. Another young lady from Centralia met with a bunch of people, young people, that she's helping to pull a group of young adults together, 20-somethings. And she was talking to the pastor, and she said they wanted to do some service work. And she says, well, why don't you come to the Rock in Acts 1-8 and, you know, work with us? And the pastor said, I just don't quite understand what it is that he does. And she said, so she tried to explain it, and he sat there and just still confused. You know, still because...
Do you understand why they don't understand?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If I did, then I could explain it.
Yeah.
So, no, it's really hard for me to explain, because as soon as you think you know what it is, it changes. And so now here's the truth. We go down to Texas, and I meet some people, and they come in, and they had one idea of what they're going to do. They thought we were going to do Habitat for Humanity type stuff, and you know, we're going to go in, and we're going to be, you know, working on people's homes and renovating and fixing them up. And when they got down there, I said, no, I want you to go to an adult daycare. I want you to go to a senior center, and then I want you to play with kids in the afternoon. They all looked at me and said, what? What? That's not mission work. And I said, yeah, that's what I want you to do. And I had somebody confess to me afterwards that if I had known that this was what it was, I wouldn't have come, but then I would have missed out. And so we just go out, and we just are with people. And here's the amazing thing. We find the hurting ones. We find the ones that everybody has left by the wayside because they don't fit our programs. They don't fit our profiles. They don't fit what our agendas want to accomplish. So when we go out and we're so stuck to our agendas and our organization and our, you know, our goals and et cetera, and they don't fit with those goals and exactly what we're going to accomplish, I teach them to, let's see, Psalm 46:10. You familiar with that one?
No.
Good, because...
Want me to look it up?
Oh, yeah, no, I've already got it. Because there's a young pastor, his name is Pastor Matt Weiss, he has a tattooed on his neck.
We and one can't day, have that.
I know, he works in the jail ministry. And one day I asked him, all right, Matt, tell me what that says, because I'm not going to take the time to look it up. I'm too busy. And he says, I'm going to embarrass you. And I said, then embarrass away, because I can't think of what it is. He said, be still and know that I am God. And we miss the be still part. We're way too busy organizing. We're way too busy putting our agendas together. We're way too busy with our goals. We're way too busy with our constitutions and bylaws. And once we have those things, we think we know what we're going to be doing. And most of the time, now, I'm not saying all the time, but I'll just say a lot of the time, we miss these people and we dismiss them because they're too difficult, they're too hard to reach, and we don't sit and listen to them. So once you kind of like calm down and let God show you who you're going to reach, it is absolutely amazing.
You know, I'm probably your worst nightmare.
Yes, you are.
I mean, just thank you for agreeing. Just look at my environment.
I know.
Here. Here's my transmitter log every day.
Yep.
Every day we take and write down what the transmitter's doing over here. And here's my program log. Uh-huh. This is the order here.
Yep.
We don't. Here's the computer here that plays all the stuff, and I got these computers here. My Bible says right here every day.
Uh-huh.
Look at the organization of this control board.
Uh-huh.
I'm just up to my eyebrows in organization.
Uh-huh.
And if you were to say to me, you know, Chuck, let's just go past 12 o'clock. Let's just keep
going. That's right.
I would probably expire.
That's right.
Uh-huh. Now, I think I'm more typical than atypical, right?
Uh-huh.
In other words, I'm pretty rigid. I'm not very inflexible.
Uh-huh.
We fairly rigid, inflexible people,
uh-huh.
And I'm not like, you know, I'm not just like in concrete or anything. Uh-huh. But what we want is structure. Mm-hmm. We need this log right mm-hmm. here. We need this log over here. Everything hauls right in with the world. So when you come along and say, I don't think so. We're going to do this instead.
Yep.
I don't even know what to do with that.
Good. You just described when they walk through the door, and I just say, this week, this is what we're going to do instead. And they just, Pastor, you got to tell me what we're doing. I had a young vicar saying, well, you want to get my congregation involved, I'll have to tell them what we're going to do and how many screen doors we're going to replace and, you know, how many screws we're going to need and hammers and all this stuff. And they got to know this 30 days ahead of time so they can get organized, etc. And I said, well, then you're going to be grievously disappointed because they'll bring all their tools and we won't use a single one because we're going to go out and play Gaga ball with a bunch of people.
Yeah.
You familiar with Gaga ball?
I am.
You are?
I am.
Oh, you're the man. Well, you're one ahead of me because I never heard of it before. Mm-hmm. And we went down to Texas and we played Gaga ball and I didn't think anybody would do it. And sure enough, we ended up with kids running to the church to play Gaga ball after a week of playing it. And it was just amazing. And parents coming. And
now, just for we don't need to spend a lot of time on this, but there's somebody probably, and I have to test to see if what I'm thinking is what you're thinking, the same thing. But it involves a ring.
Yeah.
You get kids into a ring. Yep. You get a soccer ball or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And you bat the ball around. If it hits you in the leg or something, you're out. It's just a sort of an elimination game.
Yeah.
But kids just, they get highly competitive and highly focused, and they love it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what we're talking about.
But what is wonderful with this game is the little kids that get in. They can be as young as, you know, like 6 years old being in there.
They can win.
And they win. Yeah, because us older people, we can't jump.
Slow.
Yeah, plus we're way up there, and you got to be down low.
Yeah.
And these kids are so agile, they'll jump, they'll fall on the ground, and it is just awesome.
But Pastor,
you
got to schedule Gaga
I know.
At 1 o'clock on Tuesday, because you got to have a schedule.
Uh-huh.
You can't just be deciding when you show up, well, let's play Gaga,
because
you might... You know what? You might play Gaga ball all day and not replace a single screen door. Now, that would be a disaster.
Yeah, and that's exactly what everybody thought. You're not going to do construction. No, not this trip. No, we found Gaga ball and then going to the adult daycare centers where there's severely, handicapped, for lack of a better term, severely challenged individuals in this daycare, and the kids went in and sat and talked with them. Do you know what the director of the daycare said to me? No one comes in and listens to them, and that's all they did. For the entire week, they went in and they listened to them. Then they played music, and it was just phenomenal. The people came to life, and they just... And all the kids fell in love with these people and recognized them as people with different personalities, with different traits, not handicapped or challenged. They knew them as Mario. And the stories were phenomenal, what was happening.
You know, it's interesting that people are right-handed and left-handed.
Mm-hmm,
I happen to know one kid. I know one kid, he's in high school now, who can throw a fastball right-handed or left-handed in the 80s, either way, he's ambidextrous. Mm-hmm. But that is the rarest of people. Uh-huh. Most of us, we're either right-handed or left-handed.
Uh-huh.
And if you were to say to somebody, you right-handed people, you're going to have to do these left-handed things from now on. Most people would check out.
Yep.
They're just not going to do that. That tells me that you, Pastor, you... All right, left-handed guy, I'm speaking figuratively now, who has found a left-handed activity. And you flourish in it. And we right-handed people, we look at that and we go, I don't know how he does that, because that sure is left-handed, but it seems to be working. So that's a good thing. But you know what? I don't think you could take me, a right-handed person, put me in your left-handed world, and I could succeed. I'm not sure you... I think you have to be sort of wired or... created by God with these gifts and talents in order to succeed. You can't really teach us inflexible, rigid folks how to be, to do what you do, can you? Really?
No. It's called the body of Christ. Do you realize I'm sitting here right now, and if I was in charge of this radio station, it would be out of business because we would start at maybe today we'll start at 9, and maybe tomorrow we'll start at 9:30. Maybe after that, maybe we just won't have a day, and we'll just not be on the air, and there'll be dead air. And how long before people go, well, there's no consistency here, you know?
About 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I wouldn't last. And you're absolutely right. But I'm sitting here right now in your world, following your rules and loving every minute of it because I appreciate what you do. I couldn't do this. I would be sitting under your desk sucking my thumb because this would just drive me nuts. I couldn't do it and be so rigid. I'm the up until 2 o'clock in the morning because somebody needs me person and then sleep in until maybe 10 because that's just the way my life rolls and I'm going to roll with it. But here's the amazing thing. I go out and I find these things. I go out and I find the kids with Gaga Ball and we just figure it out. Once we figure it out, guess who comes in? Guess who takes over? Not takes over, but who comes in and then fits in perfectly are the people that now know schedules and know how to organize it and know what to do and how to pull more people in, and then it grows.
But how often do we kill it?
Sometimes we do, with rigidity and with the lack of sitting down in prayer. We forget God, we forget the Holy Spirit. Use my gifts and my talents, Lord, you know, which is you're an organized person. Lord, show me how to use this and how not to lord it over somebody and not beat them over the head because you could come and work with me. And you would be the person going, just show me. I have no clue what you're doing, but I'm going to follow. Now, I will show you how to do this stuff. Then you come along. Afterwards, you're going, now, this is how I could fit in. Then I hand it off to you. Once you understand, be still and know that I am God.
It seems to me that almost without exception, maybe you're aware of an exception or two. Almost without exception, human beings identify a need among themselves. They act to fill that need. Then they organize the structure to continue to fill that need. And before long, the structure is more important than filling the need. And it's over. It just seems like that cycle is locked in. And that's just too bad, it seems to me.
Well, then that's when we throw it away, knock down the temple, and we'll turn to tents, and we'll go out and move around with the tents instead of building some temple that's permanently
located. God bless you. You may do that, but the rest of us, we knock down the building and build a bigger building.
Yeah.
That requires more budget and more donations and more gifts, and the building is magnificent, but we don't even know why we built the original building in the first place. We forgot the original need or the original purpose. It seems to me that somehow you have dodged that bullet.
Well, I wish. I wish I see the same things. We have to keep a facility going. We have to keep the rock going. And, boy, sometimes I just wish, Lord, let somebody else take care of that. We'll just move to tents, and we'll just move around, and we'll just find the people. But the truth is this. I had a lady that was there with us down in Texas. She went by the handle Mama B. And I mentioned my sister couldn't come with us because my sister is taking care of my mom, who's very, very ill. And so she couldn't come down to Texas, and my sister takes care of all of the organizational stuff. I get down to Texas, and I just told them, honestly, I don't know what we're doing for food. And this lady looked and says, really? I'll take care of that. And she organized all the food. And I would go out in the morning before everybody got up, and I would go out and buy the food, and I'd bring it in, and she'd take care of the whole day. And then she was out playing Gaga Ball with us, and she's doing all the other stuff, but she was using her gift, which is, man, she took care of all the kitchen needs and, you know, cleaning up, and that was her gift and her gift to us. The second group comes in, and we have a pastor that basically did the same thing. He says, I absolutely love being in the kitchen, and he really didn't thrive being out playing Gaga Ball. But yet he was in the kitchen, he took care of this stuff, and whenever he could, he'd be out with them, but not like leading the relational Gaga Ball, you know, playing stuff. But he was out there observing and going, this is awesome. But here's my gift. That's what we do together. You know, we add our gifts without becoming, we need to be servants. That's the whole key, is I want to serve. I'll be a servant as God has gifted me. I cannot be the one putting organization, all that stuff together. I need a, I need you.
Let's take a phone call here, 505-780-1800-730-2727. Hi, James, you're on the Bible study.
Hello, Pastor. Did I hear you say earlier that you were not able to explain what you were doing in urban ministry?
Not in the, how do you want to put it? Not in the bullet point way. My explanation takes a lot of time.
Yeah, yeah, because I could see where you're using group identity theory, empathy training, conflict resolution, I guess diversity training, and all of those are very pertinent and important parts of urban ministry, even if you're playing gaga ball. And so I was just wondering, urban ministry, is there an office Senate-wide? Is there a Senate-wide, I don't know how your Senate deals with urban ministry. I know that I heard of a summit that was in Concordia University, Chicago, River Forest, I guess, back in October. Did you attend that?
No.
And what is the, do you know about Dr. Nunez and some of his rethinking of urban ministry and what's happening Senate-wide with that? I'd like to hear some of that.
All right. We'll talk about it. Thanks for the
Thank
call.
You.
Yeah, Dr. Nunez, I know him. I've met him a number of times. No, we're not sitting down once a week having lunch together. I know some of the stuff that he's talking about, and yeah, is it Senate-wide? Well, we're just out kind of doing wherever anybody will let us come, and that's Texas and now Rockford and a bunch of kids in Nebraska now and Western Michigan, and we're just going wherever the Lord leads us, you know, however he would lead us. But I like what James said, which is, oh, you're using conflict resolution, you're using this, and here's all the terms. See, I don't think in those realms. And it would be wonderful to actually be able to work with somebody like James that would say, well, this is what you're doing. Oh, great. I'm glad you can see there's a label to it. I just don't have the labels. I just go out and we just do.
Stay away from the labels, Pastor. Here's a caller identified, I think, as a vicar. Vicar Gokey? Is that
Gakey?
Gakey?
Yeah, Aaron.
Aaron,
yes.
Oh, so you know this person. Hey, welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Pastor Randy, good to talk to you again, too. I just wanted to kind of chime in since we did serve together down here at the Texas Underground the last 2 weeks, and we're still on speaking terms. the reason I think that we can't put a button on it or put a pin on it or explain exactly what's going on is because if we could, then we'd be able to define who and what the Holy Spirit actually is, and we can try that. But we can't fully ever until that day when we're all up there with him, we can't fully ever define who the Holy Spirit is. And the way that he works is amazing. And if I could define it, then that would make him less of who he is. We confess in the Lutheran Church that the Holy Spirit calls us by the gospel, that he enlightens us with his gifts, that he sanctifies and keeps us in the one true faith. But then, instead of relying and rejoicing in that fact, we rely and rejoice on our preparation and our schedules and I fall into the trap just as easily. And, the last 2 weeks were an eye-opening experience for me as we served together and watched the Holy Spirit lead us where he wanted us to go. And then we went out to serve in the adult daycares. We went ahead and forewent the construction projects. And what does he put in our path? Construction projects for somebody who's there at the daycare. Mm-hmm. And serving in her house and then being able to help somebody who needs some help. But if we had planned our construction projects the way we had planned them, we would have been working on the church building and never met this lady.
Yep.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. I want to see if I can fit this in with our previous conversation here. Mm-hmm. Get your response to the vicar.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about 1 Thessalonians 5 in the previous hour.
Mm-hmm.
And we just ran out of time. We could mm-hmm. have easily done 2 hours on that chapter. There's much there. One of the things I asked came from 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 19. It says, do not quench the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to Pastor Shank, I don't even know what that means.
Uh-huh.
I know what it means to quench thirst. Can we use our understanding of quenching thirst in the context of quenching spirit? And if we can, what does that mean?
Uh-huh.
Now, all of
uh-huh.
a sudden, talking to you in this hour,
uh-huh.
I'm thinking I'm getting a kind of a feel for what it means to quench the spirit when we box him in with our organization, our rules, and our plans mm-hmm. to the point where, you know, if his wind wants to blow this way today,
yep.
I guess it's going to blow that way, no mm-hmm. matter how many plans we've made.
Mm-hmm.
Am I making some sense
yeah.
here?
Yeah, I love it when it says, you know, do not quench the Spirit, because you think about the Spirit as tongues of fire, and the tongues of fire come down and they light them on fire. And I'm taking a stretch here, but basically when it's talking about don't quench the Spirit, don't put out the fire. When somebody's doing something and you see it, and when I see you organizing, I'm not going to sit there and say, Chuck, stop doing that. You know, you got to be more, you know, more free flowing. But the Lord has given you this gift to organize and to have this radio station going and have, you know, awesome topics
and the sinful attitude of being so inflexible that when flexibility is needed, maybe I'm not very flexible.
Oh, but that's recognizing it and seeing, all right, maybe the Lord's given me this desire to be a little bit more flexible. But my point is this, sometimes we just see somebody doing something different and we want to say, stop that. That's not God pleasing. I'm not going to go too far on this, but I had a professor that said, God's not happy with contemporary worship. And that was it. And I said, really? Have you ever listened to it? Some of these contemporary songs, they're psalms. They're direct quotes from the scripture. They're just put to different music. And, all right, don't quench the spirit just because somebody's doing something different. Listen to the content. Listen to what they're saying. Just don't dismiss somebody because they have tattoos and they have gauges in there and they have a piercing through their lip and, you know, they're tattooed all over the place. Don't judge them. Listen to the spirit. Listen to what's in their heart. Listen to what they're saying, how they're sharing it. That's what he's talking about. Don't quench it. Don't try to make somebody you. I'm not going to try and make you me, because I need guys like you that can keep me organized.
Well, you know, I'm not going to East St. Louis anytime soon.
Nope.
I'm certainly not going to Rockford or Texas. But what can I do to help you? You know, I know that. But I'm talking about the listener, the person who's listening to us now, who says, you know, Randy, he's right. He's right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to help him do what he does. What's the best way to do that?
Oh, well, the first thing we go to is prayer. Pray about it. Come and just experience it. Come and meet some of these kids that are some of the scary kids. And I'm going to share something. And please take it in context here. Don't call up and say, oh, this guy's a racist. But I took the kids down, my kids from East St. Louis, who are very, very much looking like they're from East St. Louis.
Yeah.
And I took them down to Texas, and I was sick. I wasn't able to make the first day. And a bunch of kids came from this little town called Fredericksburg, and rural, very, very German, and they came in. And they had never met my kids before. They met me, but they never met my kids before. And these girls all grabbed arms, and they're going to go meet these scary ghetto kids. And they were just so petrified because of what they saw. And once they met them, their hearts melted because they're just like us. And that's what I'm talking about. Just come and participate sometime.
All right. Give me a phone number real quick.
Oh, yeah. 314-283-0136. That's my cell number. Call me anytime.
Pastor Randy Wilkin, thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
God's
thank
blessings
you.
To you. Yeah, we will continue in Paul's letter to his second letter to the Thessalonians tomorrow here on the Bible Study.
St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.